Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com, and we're coming to you from Blog Talk Radio. You don't have to be a part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat, and it's always fun to read the poems as we do. Babbler, how are you today?
Doing all right. Ending another really long week, but next week's my last long week for a little bit, so that'll be good.
That's good. You deserve a rest. So I'm glad you're getting close to the end of the madness.
Yep, for now. How are you doing?
All right. It was a bit of a wonky week. I had a seizure, so that always screws me up for a little while, but I'm starting to feel normal today, so yay. Hopefully I can think straight.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have awesome poems today because you had a cool prompt. So do you want to talk to us about your contest?
Yeah, so my contest was based on the book The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. It's a really good book. I recommend anyone who is interested in, like, philosophy and just, life choices in general, read it. It's a really surprisingly easy read, but it's a deep thinker. You'll be kind of milling it over in your mind for days. So it kind of follows a character named Nora. She's kind of instabilities of her life that she could have or could still be having. There's a lot of really good quotes in there that I thought would make excellent prompts to write to. So I pulled a selection of six of those. The first quote is, "The paradox of volcanoes was that they were symbols of destruction, but also life. Once the lava flows and cools, it solidifies and then breaks down over time to become soil, rich, fertile soil. She wasn't a black hole, she decided. She was a volcano. And like a volcano, she couldn't run away from herself. She'd have to stay there and tend to that wasteland. She could plant a forest inside herself." Prompt two was, "A person was like a city. You couldn't let a few less desirable parts put you off the whole. There may be bits you don't like, a few dodgy side streets and suburbs, but the good stuff makes it worthwhile." Prompt three is, "We only need to be one person. We only need feel one existence. We don't have to do everything in order to be everything, because we are already infinite. While we are alive, we always contain a future of multifarious possibility." Prompt four was, "Sometimes just to say your own truth out loud is enough to find others like you." Prompt five was, "It is quite a revelation to discover that the place you wanted to escape to is the exact same place you escaped from, that the prison wasn't the place, but the perspective." And then prompt six was, "When you stay too long in a place, you forget just how big an expanse the world is. You get no sense of the length of those longitudes and latitudes, just as," she supposed, "it is hard to have a sense of the vastness inside of any one person. But once you sense that vastness, once something reveals it, hope emerges, whether you want it to or not, and it clings to you as stubbornly as lichen clings to rock." Those were the prompts. I really look forward to reading all the poems.
All right. I love the prompts. I wrote two of them, and I intend to write to the other ones, even though I don't enter the contest, just because they were such amazing prompts. So why don't we start with prompt one responses, and Weaver of Dreams wrote to that one, if you want to read that.
Absolutely. All right, this is Growth, Life, Death by Weaver of Dreams. All had been black, but slowly fronds of green appeared, an awakening to new life and all that might entail. Tendrils of hope stretched tentatively towards her son, connections made, she could see a verdant future prevail. Aeons passed, and her dark world was able to thrive. Until cracks appeared, red-hot death came to the fore. Lava flowed, and all before it was burned and destroyed, leaving a kernel that over time might grow once more. The cycle was tiring, leaving nothing in reserve. From dark to light, fissures appeared again, destruction followed. Time to stop. There would be no more new, only old. End poem. I enjoyed this piece. It has kind of a seriousness to it that I really enjoyed. It kind of reminds me of a phoenix, but I don't think it's really so much about a phoenix as it is about just life cycle and the cycles of growth and change and starting over, and how at the end of it, it's the last cycle. Just kind of like the weariness of aging and almost like that readiness to move on. I've known some elderly people, obviously not all, but are kind of ready to go.
which I've always found really fascinating. You know, they've kind of made peace with it, like, and I wonder if this is a bit like, you know, not so much that it's terrible that there's no more new, only old, that this is the last cycle, because the cycling is tiring. You know, to get to the last bit you want to see or do or just be okay with moving on, I think is kind of interesting, because it's about the cycle, but it's also about endings. So I enjoyed it. I also thought it was really beautiful. There was some really great word choice in here, you know. Slowly fronds of green appeared, and you can just kind of picture, like, the unfurling of fiddleheads, almost like ferns. You know, tendrils of hope stretched tentatively toward our sun. It's very spring-like, very young, you know, but then it talks about the passing of time and then the red-hot death, you know, even just that anger. I don't know, I picture almost like angst you feel when you're younger, you know. So I thought the word choice was really great. I did like the undertone of seriousness throughout and just a life cycle. You know, how it's repetitive but does have an end. So the title fit very well. What did you think, Faisiana?
I think it's a beautiful exploration of that cycle. The tendrils of hope stretching. I really liked that it was towards her son. And then the idea of the cracks coming and the lava flowing, but leaving a kernel that over time might grow once more. And it's kind of like a plant that's dying and leaves that seed. And as things decay, they end up leaving something that can start again. And that cycle is beautiful in all of its stages. But it can be tiring, I would think, going through that for nature, the over and over again, death to growth, growth to death. It's quite a lot. And for the desire of that cycle to stop is, I don't know, a little bit scary. I mean, 'cause that's the end of all if the cycle stops. But it, I don't know, there's an interesting darkness to this, but it also speaks to the beauty of the cycle, even as it is tiring. It's a powerful poem. It creates the images in your mind.
Yeah, agreed. I that darkness, that kind of seriousness to it, I think really gives the poem some weight. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great piece. What are we reading next?
I was the only other person who wrote to that prompt, so I guess I'll go.
All right.
To be a volcano. I was magma bubbling under a cool surface, complimented on my carefree whimsy, giggles that erupted to release building pressure. I was lava that broke through a cracked psyche, painful to get close to, but beautiful from a distance. In small doses, I was exciting for thrill seekers. I was a volcano that destroyed a home, scorching the familiar, suffocating the firefighters. I am an island with igneous foundation. My story will nourish an ecosystem, hope forged of ashes. End poem.
I enjoyed this, right, Faisiana. I mean, it's actually a pretty short piece, but it feels like it tackles quite a few things in just a few lines. I also found it pretty relatable, like the giggles that erupted to release building pressure. I mean, I do this all the time. The more awkward the moment, the more I'm likely to laugh, just to break it. So I relate to that. I think it really kind of, you know, it's something that probably a lot of people have experienced, but you take it on to another level. I also really like the idea that, you know, it's lava that's breaking through a cracked psyche, you know, like a mental break, a mental fracture. And it's dangerous, you know, but beautiful at the same time. which I find really, you know, is fascinating and a way to look at, you know, I'm struggling to find the right word. Like, my mind wants to fill with mental illness, but that's not what I'm, not really it. You know what I mean? It's almost like a, an escape from oneself, you know, like a climbing out of the shell, a cracking in a way. And I think it's wonderfully written here, you know, to finally bubble out with all that rage and anger, you know, to burn down a current life to rebuild. I loved the idea of an island with an igneous foundation, like it's a solid, you know, really solid hard rock foundation that they, you know, also tells the story, you know, of the erupting volcano. So I really liked that, you know, and then hope forged of ashes. Volcanoes have such fertile soil, you know, to start anew, and what better way to start anew? So I really liked it. I thought it was very well written. And it feels like a much longer poem than it is. I mean that in a good way.
It's because it goes through all the stages, I guess. Like one line per stage of the lava, but it's kind of me. I'm all over the place.
I guess what I mean is it feels dense. You know, like it feels like a meaty poem, and it's just, it's not that long. You know, you've got 4 3-line stanzas. It's really only a 12-line poem, but I think it tackles quite a bit. And to go through all those different stages so compactly and not have it read like something that's compact, I think works really well. I think I said what I meant to say better.
Thank you.
Right.
I'm going to skip prompt 2 for now because I'm the only one who wrote to it, and we just did mine. So let's go to prompt 3. And there's one here by Rich F.
This is Could Have, Should Have by Rich F. Stifled, stretched, and slowly stultified. Cosmic circles closing in on me. The jester's knots and nooses neatly tied. This cutthroat clansman better ostracized. The multiverse now cannot be denied. My fate, final destiny. And now I break the shackles, casting off these chafing caustic chains, shed my slowly fading fickle skin, the boundaries that keep my soul within. Within these walls, these crumbled, battered, worn-out walls, perfect in their time-worn, weather-beaten withering, concrete crushed my heart impure, explodes. I could have been oh so much more. I could have walked upon the moon, could have won the egg and spoon race, passed all of my entrance exams, failed life's little tests, and the rest is history. And as my living body dies, decays, my spirit soars, glowing in its holy firelight, flies to another time, another place, walking on a distant moon, orbiting a far-flung exoplanet, bathing in a newborn alien sunrise. I contemplate a new life full of infinite possibilities. End poem. I really loved the exploration in this piece, you know, to start it with, like, stifled, stretched, and slowly stultified, you know, to just feel kind of encapsulated in this body, you know, and to feel like the coming of death. Like, to feel pain in your own body, you know, but then to realize there's still much more life to live. You know, it's kind of, it feels like a going back on all of the things you should have done in your life as imposed by yourself, which I really enjoyed, you know. Like, as your body wears out and you get older and you age, you don't, in your mind, feel any younger, older, even though your body feels older. And I think you kind of encapsulate that, you know, and all the things you're like, oh, I wish I would have done this when I was young. I love the idea of the things that they could have done. You know, walking upon the moon, winning an egg and spoon race, which is such a trivial thing to follow, walking upon the moon. Like, the level of quote-unquote success or, like, achievement between those two to equate them, I think is really kind of fun, you know. Some people dream of walking upon the moon, and some people just want to win a little backyard picnic contest. I think it's a really fun juxtaposition there. You know, passing entrance exam. And if they fail life's little test, you know, sometimes it can feel that way when you don't achieve something that you wanted to achieve or wanted to do, like somehow you're failing at life. Although it's interesting, you know, really the only person putting that kind of judgment typically is yourself. So, you know, and then to go back to the body, but this focus more on the spirit. You know, the soul is still alive in the imagination or maybe in your next life. These are all of the things that you could be doing. You know, that moving on and as you die, you can look forward to infinite possibilities because we have no idea what happens. I really enjoyed the piece. The trips back, you know, starts in the present and kind of goes back into the past and dips into the looking ahead. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun piece. What did you think? Yeah.
I really enjoyed it too. It's hard to add to that because you commented so well. The multiverse part had me thinking about that idea that there's like the infinite versions of things where if you made a different choice, this is what life would have been like. If you made a different choice, this is what life's gonna be like. And you know, when it's coming to the end of your life, there's not that many more choices to make. It seems like the multiverse is not splitting as much anymore. There aren't so many possibilities. So I just found that multiverse part interesting, and I kind of got lost in thinking about that for a while, because it's all about choices. Then I really liked the alliteration in the second stanza, casting off these chafing caustic chains. Even though it uses the same letter, it's different sounds of the sea, casting, chafing, caustic, chains. And it kind of alternates like the C-A, C-H, C-A, C-H. And there's just a flow in the way that it does that I really enjoyed. The concrete crushed my heart impure. Impure is capitalized in a point in the sentence where it wouldn't normally be. So I think that really emphasizes impure and that heart being crushed because it is impure explodes. And being crushed and exploding kind of go opposite ways. Like, crushed, tend to think it goes inward, and exploding, it's going outward. For it to do both is really powerful of an image. I like the part that you pointed out, the contrast between walking on the moon and then having an egg race. Oh, pardon me, I'm sorry, I'm sneezy. The ending really struck me. I contemplate ex corpus, a new life full of infinite possibilities. The idea of not being stuck in your body. There's this song that I really like when I'm not feeling well physically. It's by the band Mother Mother. And I don't know how famous they actually are because they're like from here. So for us, they feel big, but probably not as much on a global scale. They have this song that's like, take my hands, they'll understand. Take my, and it kind of goes through like all the body parts. It's like, I don't really need it. And it's like, I'm so tired of this body. cumbersome and heavy body. And it's just like, get rid of like all of my corporeal things. And they sound much better than that, obviously. But it's like getting rid of all the parts, the clumsy bits, the painful bits. Just what would I be without this body? What kind of freedom would that be is what the song is about. And when I read that last stanza, I'm like, what would it be like to exist without a body slowing you down? It's just an interesting concept that I feel like I could drift off thinking about. So thank you, Rich S., for getting us thinking.
Yeah, I love what you pointed out about the, you know, the imploding and the exploding, you know, because he does it a couple times, like even in that first line, the stifled, stretched, you know, to be stifled and stretched, two opposite things. I think there's a few plays on the in and out. I think that was a great observation. What do we have going on next?
That depends. Did you hear from Sleeping Lion?
Oh, let me check. Sounds familiar, but I've been so freakishly busy.
I just, that they have a really nice piece, but I hadn't heard from them. So I'm just going to hold off on that one until we find out if they did send you permission.
I did. Yes. I have a message from Sleeping Lion. We're good.
Oh, excellent. Okay. In that case, I will read one by Sleeping Lion.
Thanks for checking.
I put it on the board just in case. Moon shadows. Almost. <Yeah. laughs> Moon shadows by Sleeping Lion. It is resistance in me that I feel, compelling me away from what is real. I focus on the feeling and arrive at ego's message hidden in disguise. A shadow of a shadow I compress in feelings of my utter loneliness. When truth in me is greater, yes, by far, I am star stuff descended from a star. I focus on resistance every day till higher self descends to run the play. For pure in heart is what it's all about. When truth becomes my lover, there's no doubt. When Christ in me arises, I can say, rejoice, I am the player and the play. End poem.
Excellent read. I really enjoyed the way that it's kind of a self-exploration, you know. It is resistance in me that I feel compelling me away from what is real. You know, just this denial of something that kind of leads you away from what, you know, is now considered the truth. And it's just like that exploration. You know, I am star stuff descended from a star. So it's not even necessarily a denial, you know, but just the realization that everything is so much bigger and greater and more purposeful than one person. You know, and then that, the last couplet there, I think is really well done as well. You know, when Christ in me arises, I can say, rejoice, I am the player and the play. Obviously a little bit of a nod there to Shakespeare, but, you know, just to say, you know, I'm a piece of this, you know, a small piece, but I'm still a piece of it, you know. A clock, even missing one small cog, doesn't work. So I thought there was a very nice, larger message in here. I also really appreciated the author's note. I think it gave quite a bit of insight to this piece. And so the author's note is, being born a Christian, then disillusioned. I searched the world for wisdom and found it everywhere. So when I mention Christ, it is in the knowledge that every wise religion has Christ in it, just the words used that are different. You know, just kind of an open-mindedness to religion, you know. I thought was interesting, just a way of seeing things differently and opening, you know, what Christianity means to one person to encompass, you know, other religions, which not everybody does. So I can appreciate that. Seems like a key point in somebody's life of self, you know, realization and understanding of what it is they truly believe. So I enjoyed the write. So thank you, Sleeping Lion. What are your thoughts, Daisiana?
I'm glad you pointed out that AN because I thought it was an important one too. Like I read the poem and then I read the AN and then I read the poem again when I was first looking at it. And I think that you can see Sleeping Lion's kind of openness and way of life even more clearly after you read that. Like, you know, looking for wisdom everywhere, seeing the connections between the different religions. It felt like it suited the poem in that looking through yourself in that way too, at ego's message hidden in disguise, to be contemplative and look at yourself and look at the world. I get this feeling of kind of a philosophical spirit here. So to say I am star stuff descended from a star, it seems like something that Sleeping Lion would really contemplate before writing and just have some deep thoughts that really come through here. I like the quote, "Rejoice, I am the player and the play." That's such a great quote. To be within to be the person playing and the actual play, it's just, I feel like that should maybe be a prompt in itself, that line from Shakespeare. That's an excellent line. So I really enjoyed this, and I'm happy that we did end up getting permission from him.
Yeah, thanks for checking in on that. I agree. And the book itself, too, Midnight Library, is a very philosophical write. So I appreciate the philosophical responses to it. I think it matches the theme very well. All right. And now where are we headed?
Now we're on to prompt 4. And the person who wrote to that is Diane D. I'm just going to double check I don't have an audio for that one. Which audios do I have? I'm going to tell you in advance, so in case I forget, Mr. M, Naomi, and Radio Bravo have audios. So no, I don't have one for Diane D.
Okay.
I think it's your turn to read.
Yes, it is. So this is Transmit the Truth, Transmit Your Truth by Diane D. The truth is we can't continue to cover our ears like a child and pretend there is silence when the universe is moaning, sputtering over our networks are no longer telephone wires, but electric molestations of what sits within our morality, stripping the vague of all clarity, tattooing urgency onto the old metallic lies buried deep down no spring thaw will ever reveal them, reasoning with our raped egos by pretending to capture time so that time can be purchased and be resold to the subscriber, where once we could read the truth in the eyes blink by blink, their eyes are sealed infinitely, their truth is not in keystrokes. To spread the truth at a pace where honesty can be coded will only happen when words convey the deciphered truth. This is the time when the truth is transferable on all platforms. It can travel this universe at the speed next to that of light. Paint, pen, sing, type the truth. Spill the lies onto the canvas in 7 revealing rainbow colors so that indigo exposes metallic. End poem. I really enjoyed this piece. This piece is a bit gritty feeling, which I really kind of like. Getting out of denial, like stop pretending that everything is okay when when not everything is okay. You know, people don't look at each other anymore. They don't interact anymore like they used to interact. We're communicating electronically, which is kind of ironic considering this current platform. there's irony there, I feel, in saying this. But, you know, and that you're losing some of the depth of interaction. You know, social media, you know, kind of, it's a little bit of a misnomer, right? Because you're spending time on an electronic device and not actually interacting physically with other people. And there is loss to that. As someone with a really kind of wry and dark sense of humor, which is very often deadpan, it's hard for me to communicate my humor sometimes electronically and it falls flat. And I have to worry about whether or not the other person feels like I actually just insulted them when I had no intention of doing that. So I'm like, no, that's not how it meant. If you could see my face and my body language, you would know. And I feel like this poem kind of speaks to this, you know, the way that, you know, stripping the vague of all clarity. I think it also talks, too, about the over-dedication to work that we have, pretending to capture time so that time can be purchased and resold to the subscriber, buy things in like hourly packages, you know, get paid for your labor in hours. Like it's a physical thing. Like time is a thing you can negotiate with, but it, you know, no matter what you do, your life is moving forward at the rate of 1 second per second. It's not really something that is negotiable or can be captured or stopped. So I thought that was, you know, an interesting line as well. But then you get close to the end, you know, and it talks about truth is transferable on all platforms and can travel the universe at next to the speed of light. You know, we can communicate with each other. It is a thing that we can do, but, you know, we're not using it in the best way that can be used. We're not using it to spread art and love and joy. We're using it to make money. So it's kind of what I get out of this. And this is kind of like the search to express that pain and try to find, you know, connections with people, which were, I think, in some ways and still are. It's much easier to make deeper, more tangible connections in person than it is via the internet, you know, and I feel like so much now is becoming internet heavy. I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but I have a group that I'm a part of for a hobby of mine, and one of the members of that group is a 17-year-old girl, and I don't think she really has many, if any, real friends outside of our Discord group, which concerns me. You know, as someone who's older, I'm just, you know, I have childhood friends that I've had forever, and I've built really sturdy friendships. As I didn't grow up, you know, so hardwired to my phone because I didn't even really have a cell phone until college. And to see her like up at, like all hours of the night attached to a phone and not appearing to have much of a social life outside of it, you know, it kind of concerns me. You know, like what kind of human connection does she actually have? So I'm not her parent. These are just things that I think. but I really enjoyed this piece. I think it prods at some things that are worth thinking about, and you know, expressing these things are things that help move towards that goal of using the technology that we have to spread like culture and art and thought rather than goods. So I thought it was an excellent write. What did you think?
Well, first I want to comment on how you're saying that people can't tell your sense of humor when you're talking online. I tend to, like, after the fact add stupid, like, LOLs and smiley faces and stuff because I realize that I sometimes am taken really seriously when I'm not at all serious. Like, people get really mad at me about things that I'm like, you know, I was kidding, right? Like, I didn't, like not even, like, in a making fun of them way, just, like, I don't know, I'll make fun of myself and it will come off as like arrogant because I can't remember when I first joined the rap group that I'm in on All Poetry. I was like, yeah, because I'm the best, or like whatever. And like I was being sarcastic because I suck, and people were like,
what?
You know, you just started, so like maybe calm down. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm awful. This is what I'm saying. But I don't know. It's just you sometimes have to like add in like the little thing that makes it seem like, hey, just kidding, which is awkward to say. But sometimes you have to online if you're not clear enough that like I'm not serious about anything. So I think I come off a lot more serious in writing than I do out loud. I don't know. it's a challenge sometimes. Yeah.
So it really doesn't work because it just sounds terrible in text, save for those jokes for people.
Yeah. Except when I'm around actual people, I get too nervous and I say it wrong anyway. So like, no matter what, it's just not funny.
It's a different kind of funny.
Yeah, it's true. Never how I intend it. In terms of the poem, I really liked in the beginning when it says, and pretend there is silence when the universe is moaning. This reminds me of people are always trying to get me to meditate or like just like, they're like, just allow yourself the silence. I'm like, there is no silence. Like, I'm like, first of all, like, on a physical level, I have, like, super hearing because of my brain damage. So, like, it's never silent. What are you talking about? But also, on a mental level, if there actually is silence, then my brain really doesn't shut up. And it's just, like, all the crazy thoughts, and I spiral into anxiety. I don't do well with silence. So, everyone, like, doctors and therapists and, like, everyone is like, oh, just go for one of those, like, floats where you have no sensory input, and you'll just be able to, like, hear the silence of the world. And I'm just like, no. The world is suffering. It's a little different than what she's going here for here, I think. But when it says the universe is moaning, I'm like, I feel you. Yeah, there is no silence. Don't pretend. When it's talking about the online difficulty reading the truth, where once we could read the truth in the eyes, blink by blink, their eyes sealed infinitely, their truth is not in keystrokes. It is harder to tell if someone is genuine when it's online. You don't have that intuition kind of warning, that subconscious recognition of the body language, that feeling that you get when you're being lied to, which, you know, you don't always know in person either, but you miss it. This week is not Freedom of Information Week, that's a different week. It's Media Literacy Week, and I've been working on presentations about, recognizing if things are from reliable sources or not. And misinformation is a huge thing that has exploded with online activity because anyone can create content. Anyone can make a website. You can easily Photoshop things. There's so many ways to fake things. And then it gets shared on social media and it becomes a thing where people are actually taking it as news or truth. And so recognizing that hidden behind keystrokes, you don't always know what's real, is a skill that people need to learn to function in our world. There was the cutest example of, I don't know if everyone's as in touch with picture books as I am, but there's this Mo Willems book, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. That's like probably about 10 years old now. But it's this silly pigeon, and it wants to drive the bus. And throughout the whole thing, the kids have to say, no, you can't drive the bus. So there's this shortage of bus drivers right now because the COVID rules and everybody quit. And there was this news story that had a photoshopped, like, of the pigeon from the picture book, and it says, due to staff shortages, the pigeon will now be driving the bus. But it's like you see the news anchor who, like, looks like a legit news anchor behind the desk, and there's, like, the headlines and all the stuff. But then in the image, it's the little pigeon riding the bus. And so, like, you show the kids, and you're like, okay, so is this a real news story? No. But it's just such a cute example. It was due to shortages, the pigeon will drive the bus. And she's talking about more serious things here in this poem than, you know, the pigeon. But the thing is, not being able to recognize whether a person you're talking to or rather an organization is being legit is harder and harder as there is that distance of technology in between us. So I really appreciate the way that she's recognizing this will only happen when words convey the deciphered truths, and you have to decipher just about everything now. Because the truth is transferable on all platforms. When it's coming to you on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and, like, all the different things, it's sometimes hard to filter out what's real. What is the real version of everything? What is the real version of a person who has photoshopped themselves and changed their voice and, like I am guilty of those things. So, like, you don't know what's real. And I find this to be very revealing. And like you said, it is a bit funny that we're talking about this on a platform where, you know, we share our thoughts online. We have a community online. We are speaking to people from other places and not having that physical in-person connection. And, you know, I truly care about a lot of the people I've met through All Poetry, yourself included. But it's something that we have to think about even as we are hypocrites in it.
Right. I'm like, I've never met you in person. That's weird. I'm reading this and I'm like,
Yeah. I know my mom went, I told her about the radio shows a while ago. I had kind of kept it on the down low because I don't tend to behave myself in the way that she would approve. At one point it came out that I was doing this, and so she listened to a couple of my shows with Dexter, and she's like, so do you guys, like, hang out in the coffee shop when you do this? And I'm like, no, I've never met him. No. And she was just like, what do you mean? we're not actually, like, together while we do it. And she's just shocked by this. And I'm like, no, he's, like, in Minneapolis. Like, it's pretty far. And she was just like, he's not even in Canada? And I'm like, remember Tan, who I talked to? She's in New Zealand. And she was just like, whoa. So it's a bigger world than people make the connection.
Yeah, no, I
just thought that was so cute because she was like, he sounds like such a nice boy. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, my mom told my grandma about the show, and I'm like, and then my grandma wanted information to watch it, and I'm like, no. I'm like, Mom.
I know, it's nerve-wracking, right? Like, yeah. My parents just bought my books, and I'm like, I love you, but I don't know if you're going to love me after this.
My family gets to see a very curated selection of my writing.
Yeah. I know. I had this contradiction where, like, part of me is like, I made, like, this pseudonym and stuff because I wanted to be able to be completely open and not censor myself at all. But then this other part of me is like, writing is such a huge part of my life. I'm like, I have 3 books you can buy on Amazon. I'm like, I want to scream that. So, you know, in a moment of weakness, I was like, hey, I have these books, and now everyone has them, and I'm like, no. I'm like, now if I publish anything else with this name, it has to be, like, appropriate. I'm like, no, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I feel you on that, because, yeah, my friends and family always want to read my poems, and I'm like, nope, not that one, not that one. I don't know, for me, it's almost like a diary. You know, so it's almost like people being like, hey, can I read your diary? It's like, well, this is weird.
I know, and I said that, and they're like, then why did you publish it?
Because you want to know who I am.
Yeah, exactly. Like, sometimes you want to get it out there into the world, but not have yourself judged specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why pseudonyms exist.
Yes, but I think this is kind of, it gets connected to that poem again where it's talking about, like, you know, the hiding behind the keyboard, which I do.
There's the hiding behind the keyboard, but it almost turns it into a hiding behind yourself, like hiding behind your own name. It's almost like, I'm more open and more who I am online than I am in person because I don't want to be judged in person. I can't escape my own face, but I can be anyone behind a keyboard, including a truer version of myself.
I like that.
It's just fun.
The truer version of yourself. It's true. It's not that I'm a fake person when I'm a Faziana. I'm probably more myself. Because there's
I'm way more open.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm way more open because I'm not going to go to work tomorrow and get judged for bearing my thoughts online.
Yes.
But it doesn't make them any less my thoughts or any less more of who I am. If anything, it's a much more direct and open communication than you would get from me in person unless I was really drunk and we were really good friends.
Right? Same.
No. Yeah, so I feel like it's almost a more version of myself than a less version of myself, if that makes sense. Anyway,
it does.
It's free of stigma.
Yes. Until you're dumb like me and give away your pseudonym.
Yeah. Well, for me, I forgot how it got out that people figured out that this was me on All Poetry. So then I went private. I'm like, okay, paid membership it is.
Right?
For the logo price of, and then now we're back into that poem about the monetization. It's very relevant.
It is. I feel personally attacked.
Where are we going to?
We have one by Radio Bravo, and actually we have an audio for this one.
Okay.
Oh, and we have a call. One second.
Yay.
Let me see who this is. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to hear you. Thank you. I think I'm a first-time caller. My name is Hotep, H-O-T-E-P. And just my quick thoughts on poetry. Poetry originally was a very respected form. The poets and the musicians tended to spread news and uplift the community. And eventually we got to the point where in some regions, poets and musicians were funded by the elite, where you could become kind of financially stable doing it. Today, there seems to be more of an elitist form. I'm on All Poetry also, but I don't write poetry for billionaires or people that have, you know, the biggest cars and mansions. I tend to write for marginalized communities that often need more uplifting. So I don't always use the standard American English or the standard British English, but All Poetry has a bot that gives me all kinds of negative responses. And then I think, well, imagine if I were a 15-year-old Latino from the hood or black kid or Native Indian who purposefully or due to bad teachers and parenting couldn't communicate linguistically the way I do, but I choose not to, how would they feel? They would feel bullied. They would feel, oh, my voice doesn't matter. So like opera, classical music, and ballet, which have become elitist communities, you don't tend to see certain young people from marginalized communities at an opera or at a ballet. Poetry tends to be running in the same direction, which is, you know, kind of snobby. So I stay on all poetry, but it's not really a place that I feel welcomed because the linguistics that I choose to use don't fit with most of the community. So it's almost like eugenics and Hitler. One group is, oh, well, you don't have the blonde hair and blue eyes. You do not know the right use of the grammar. Therefore, you are not a poet. Bad you. And I don't know if Shakespeare could have spoken modern English because he spoke older English, but he's respected. So why not respect Puerto Rican, Dominican, African American, Nigerian, Native Indian poets who are communicating in their own style? I think it's kind of bias and bullying.
Yeah.
Not you all.
I'm all for having different styles. I think that's an excellent point. And there, it really depends on what groups you're in too. I'm in it's actually a rap group, but within all poetry, and I feel like a lot of the voices there do not follow the snobby, stereotypical poetic English at all, and it's partly because of the culture of rap and the style of it. But we write poems. It's just a different vernacular and different style. And I am a bit of a grammar nerd because, you know, I took English in university. But at the same time, if it's a cultural thing or if it's a purposeful slang, that's totally different than just like someone who's being lazy about it when it's how they were taught. It's a totally different situation in terms of language. So thank you for pointing that out, because I think that's an important thing to recognize, that there's different facets of English, just like there's different why can't I think of the word? Dialects of so many languages.
Yeah, different accents.
I was just going to chime in, too, and say that, you know, from my perspective, too, there's quite a few poets on allpoetry.com where English is not their first language, you know. And I'm certainly not going to attack those people for writing, you know, in imperfect grammar at all. I mean, I can't write in a second language. I think it's amazing. And then to try to rhyme or fit some kind of poetic form, I think, is an incredible feat. I've also had some people write me concerned about that thought that you're talking about that kind of ranks poems. It bothers me as well. I write tons of poems that are ranked one. And I'm like, I'm not going to change it because the bot is not understanding what I'm trying to achieve stylistically. Like, you know, to automatically, like, detract from a poem because it uses a specific word that a bot considers overused doesn't take in, like, the context or what it is that you're trying to convey with it. I think there's some real flaws with that bot, and I wish it wasn't just, like, so prevalent to the point where I see poems that literally put the score in the footnote. Because I just don't think it's that important or that relevant, to be honest. I don't think it's a good indicator of good poetry on many levels.
You can turn it off.
Yeah.
I turned it off. I don't even see my ratings because it was just upsetting me. And I don't think a robot can, like, not a robot, but like an algorithm can really judge an artistic format that is subjective, that is about feeling as much as it is technicality sometimes.
Yeah, the auto rank that they call it is synonymous to me with some of the AI that are utilized to identify criminals, or the AI that are utilized by social media to determine who should be shadow banned, et cetera. It almost seems like the all-encompassing arms of Big Brother saying that he needs a automated system to keep the serfs and slaves, when poetry by robots isn't necessarily a thing that people are looking for. They're looking for poetry by homo sapiens that have feelings, that have experiences. Someone else may live in community A and experience a lot of shootings, et cetera. Someone in community B may be around golf courses and Harvard University and Cornell grads and want to know, wow, what is community A experiencing that I haven't heard before, and vice versa. Some of the other people from the other side of the tracks may say, wow, you mean you don't know what it's like to cover your head with a pillow because you're hearing so many gunshots? But that person may not know how to communicate it in the language of the so-called college educated. Therefore, it really builds a divide between the communities. And I stay on the site, but it's really annoying. But I like to see the low rankings for things like under 2-point differences have low meaning, professional similarity, 2 out of 10, concrete versus abstract, 0 out of 10. And in my mind, I'm thinking, screw that. I don't care about that. You know. But young people won't care the way I care. To them, it could be suicidal thoughts that they figure, I'm being bullied in school, now I'm being bullied by a website, you know, let me end life. So we have to be careful. Maybe the site should come with a warning that, you know, for children under 18, we will not use the auto rank system until you feel like you want it, or you could keep it locked off. But yeah. Poetry should be free to everyone.
Or even just something you can opt into instead of have it default on there would be good.
Mm. Good thought.
You know, instead of figure out how to opt out, how about you need to figure out how to opt in?
Mm, yeah, instead of a default, yep.
Oh. Oh, I think those are excellent points.
So I'm gonna So first I'm just going to play the one that I posted, and then you
that
ready. Yeah. Actually, do you have it written, like it's posted, so you could send it to me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you in the group Late Night Poets? Pardon?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm just hearing about
so you
it
can
now.
Send me a private message. I'm Aphasiana, so that's Aphasiana. If you'll send me the link, then I'll post that in the chat because we do it so people can read along.
Yes.
And while you get that, I'm going to play the one by Radio Bravo.
Centralized Vortex Amid Gargantuan Time, a poem by Radio Bravo. That's me, by the way. Chameleon, thin wrapped skin, light-colored gin-sucking sponge. Carved inside, trim, trapping lick, lithe odor, wind, stuck in barge. Charged corridor, cell, block, locked box. Parasite, light spray, spectrum shock. Starved sycamore, smell, frock-tossed loss. Erudite might sway, spectrum knocked. Pupil eye wide, searching high tide, turning the churning to multicolor high. Amber light smashes iris white, kites fly high beside tie-dye sky. Paint spill flesh, drunken wobbly knees, hewing breeze globing paper screen. Muscle work burst lifts dragon wings, seraphim scream cerebral swing. Trireme shell pull sails aloft, cupped Bermuda path-bound laid. Triune gale wails frail and soft, cocked inertia cannonade. Dredging tide waters carry, splash arched mast blue hue. Naked feet sink, wooden drink. Azure heaven sunken in two. End poem.
Well, thank you, Radio Bravo, for the SoundCloud. It's always appreciated when people send in SoundClouds. I love hearing people's poetry in their voice. I think it adds a whole other dimension and really helps us hear it the way you intended it to be heard. So thank you. Wow, this one was so full of fascinating alliteration and just like the cadence of it I found really interesting as well. Just, you know, chameleon thin wrapped skin, like all of the internal rhyming and the rhyme scheme with light colored gin sucking sponge. Just, you know, in, just the visuals of that and then kind of piecing them together to paint like a larger image, you know, to try to picture exactly what's going on. You know, I imagine almost like a beach scene, but within somebody's mind is kind of the image that I get from it on the first read. I feel like this is one that could really benefit from multiple reads, so I'm just kind of going with my gut instinct here on this one. You know, charged corridor, cell block, locked box. To me, it feels like stuck within like a prison of the mind, like kind of stunted by your own thoughts because you're limiting yourself. And then slowly getting it out of there, you know, pupil eye wide, searching high tide, turning the churning to multicolor hide, you know, like discovering a broader range of things to see, and going from this kind of captivated, like internalization, to viewing things on a much broader scale, which I thought was really fascinating. I also found some really, interesting plays on words here that are almost like phonetic plays. You know, erudite might sway spectrum knocked. So spectrum, you know, together sounds like spectrum. And those kind of phonetic plays in here I thought were really interesting and really gave this some like brain food where I just want to read through everything and pick out the interesting sound combinations that are going on. I feel like this is a very phonetically pleasing piece, but if you read it aloud or can at least hear it in your head, I think it has a lot of texture to it. So I found that really fascinating. I did again want to note that they left a kind of long AN in here that I think kind of supplements the piece too, where it says nature versus nurture, free will versus materialistic determinism. We live in a world advanced enough to struggle with and simply suggest these complex rivalries of thought. We struggle to make sense of these ideas and how we end up where we do or how we may find what we are looking for or what we are trying to achieve. It would be absurd to think that we have solved these puzzles if only a single perspective is used, and yet we still believe a choice is to be made. Do we ever travel from where we actually are, or are we doomed as finite beings without progress? And do we even know what can constitute progress, or how much progress is required to constitute it as sufficient? You know, which I think plays well with the concept of it being, you know, a limitation of thought and trying to grasp kind of broad concepts. So I found this really interesting. I thought it was a visually pleasing piece, and the word choice was like fantastic and complex. Hotep, would you like to share your thoughts?
Oh, you can't hear me. Sorry.
Did you want to? Oh, can now. did you want to share your thoughts on the piece?
Yeah, I thought the piece was.
I can't hear Valerie.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Oh, now I can.
No, yeah, you went out again. Now I can hear you again.
Okay. Yeah. Very good poem, and congratulations to the writer. And he also has a good voiceover voice, so his voice complemented his poem well.
I agree. Yeah, I'm happy that he gave us an audio. Love when we get audios. So if you're a listener who's a little bit shy about calling in, you can send us SoundClouds or YouTubes or MP3s to my email, and we will play your own version of the poem. I thought that, Babla, you summed this up really nicely when you're talking about the vocabulary that's used and how it has that phonetic texture. I love the way that you put that, because it is. It's one that, like, it feels good on your tongue to say the words darb, sycamore, smell, frock, toss, loss. It has really cool sounds to it. It does have a lot of internal rhyming, like you pointed out, which I enjoy. And it's not your typical imagery. I think it has some really different kind of thoughts. Where is it? Lost my spot. I can't remember now. I've lost it. But there were some really cool images there that took me by surprise. And, like, naked feet sinking, you would naturally think it's going, like, into the sand, but it's wooden drink. There's just a few little surprises throughout this where it doesn't go quite the way I expect it to, and I like that.
Yeah, that line that you pointed out, that wooden drink, that's another one where my head is thinking it's another phonetic kind of play on words, like wooden drink. You know, like seawater.
Yes.
Wooden drink. I think there's a few of those tucked in here that I find really fascinating.
I love that.
Just stop. Yeah, I love this piece. I thought it was fascinating. I think I'm definitely going to come back and give it a good deep read, too. Fantastic word choice. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just really liked those lines.
Oh, they're strong lines. Hotep, I put up your poem, Invisible Beauty, if you want to read that.
For it, I wrote it a few days ago. Sorry about that. Oh, I think I got it. Invisible beauty, the seed, the little seed, it said to me to become a flower and then a tree, then a wilderness grows. So it's difficult to see the obvious dangers and invisible beauty. It travels through the unkept road, the man travels along. Alone you rode, living a life with no loving abode, the lost love, the hope you rode. Explode the lives of those who dream, the dying hopes in the unloved dream, lazy sheep through the world seen, some poems give hope, but aren't what they see. They read the same.
Lost you.
Oh, sorry. They read the poem like a military duty with eyes open but no comprehension of invisible beauty. That's the last two lines.
Thank you.
Thanks. I hope it all got through.
I think I got all but the last two lines and you came back and caught those. So, excellent job. Beautiful read, too. And I really like this poem. It's that looking at it on paper is a really fascinating shape. It's almost kind of like an urn shape or like a little statue. I'm pretty sure it's a sonnet as well. It's in sonnet form.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the concept of talking to a little tree, you know, and a little seed, and it directing you in your life to like become like this big forest. You know, and just, like, the difficulty that is living, you know, the travel through the unkept road along, you know, it's not all easy, you know, to become from a little seed to a giant forest is kind of fraught with pitfalls. And then it turns almost kind of to a war, like a war zone in a way, you know, explodes the lives of those who dream, drowning hopes in the unloved stream. You know, like, not every seedling makes it. Not every forest that's planted flourishes, is kind of what I get out of this, you know, but to fight anyway. And then those last lines, they read the poem like a military duty, with eyes open but no comprehension of visible
invisible beauty. You know, to read something for the sake of reading it without feeling it, you know, to just take it in by rote without exploring it emotionally, which applies to a poem, but I think it also applies in a lot of ways to life as well, you know, to you know, have someone tell you this is what you should do. You know, you should go to school and do well and go to college and then have a job and get married and have kids. And if you do all that without feeling it or enjoying your life, it's essentially the same thing as just reading a poem to read a poem and not feel it. So I think there's multiple meanings tucked in here, and I think it's visually an attractive poem as well. So I really enjoyed it. Great, great write, Hotep. Thank you. Faziana, did you want to share your thoughts?
Yes, I was on mute, but talking away. sorry. I was agreeing with you that I love the shape of it. It's really eye-catching and draws you in. I think that I think you said it's a sonnet, and it looks really great in that way. The rhyming scheme works really nicely. The meter flowed, and sonnets are tricky. I have a hard time with iambic pentameter. I really do for writing it, but it sounds so good when it's done. The cadence of it just naturally flowed. I like the ideas of recognizing beauty that's below the surface, the layers here of the obvious dangers and invisible beauty, that the wilderness has things that you don't necessarily appreciate the way that you would the flower, and I think that's the same of people and of societies, and you sometimes see what you want to see, or you miss out on things that are just hidden away and might be more subtle. This is a really great piece, very thoughtful.
Thanks, appreciate it a lot. By the way,
awesome.
I quickly wrote it because my objective was not to have people come out with one conclusion, but whatever people saw in it is what it was supposed to mean to them. But for me, it's the last two lines that actually meant the most to me, because I think that beauty itself has so many conditions that different cultures, tribes, ethnic groups, political parties put on it, professors, that we often come out like Floyd said, we don't need no education. Many of us come out, what's beautiful to one person is not to the other, and maybe we don't even need the seed in order to have beauty, because beauty itself existed before, you know, all of our definitions, you know. So it's whatever we get out of the poem we get, and hopefully it makes each person a better person at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I love when things can have multiple interpretations. And that's part of the fun of doing these shows. Sometimes we'll have a whole bunch of callers and everyone will get something completely different out of the poem. And hearing everyone's perspective on it can sometimes change my ideas about it, but doesn't erase my initial thoughts about it. And it's like you get to see all these different sides of how things are, because I can't remember who said it. Someone said, no two people read the same book, and it's because you bring your own feelings and thoughts and history and biases to anything, and you end up getting a different experience even if you're reading the same thing. But it's really cool when things are open to interpretation.
Yeah.
This next submission is by Neutron Bomb, and it's called Wolf Through the Skylight. I used to feel trapped between these four walls, the wolf stalking from the fence line, spreading falsehoods in grandma's clothing, to gnaw at brittle bones, stripping, children of their psyche, morsel by morsel, like three little pigs, I squandered time on the wolf that would see smashed foundations of our double brick workers' cottage. Now I implore him to come knocking, to skulk across the metal roof, slipping through the skylight, peeling back the fly screen to meet me at my bedroom, so that I might inject him with paralyzing agents and scalp his crown with a spoon, peel the fur from fat with my bare hands, and feast on his parasite-infested ichor. I wipe tribalistic blood trails across my face, then pierce his eyes with cigar-stained talons till they pop and virtuous humor seeps from static lids. End poem.
Mm. Great read. And wow, I really enjoyed this really gritty write from Neutron. Not at all where you'd think that quote would take you. You know, to take a quote that's about discovering that the place you wanted to escape is now, you know, the exact place you want to go to based on change of, you know, perspective, and to take that and be like, to change from being like the trembling little pig that you see in the nursery rhyme to essentially being the wolf, worse than the wolf, you know, to change from being like the hunted to the hunter, and to choose like such grotesque and violent language, I find so enjoyable. I don't know. I love reading the grisly though. And the more grisly you can make it, the more I tend to enjoy it. You know, it feels kind of nursery rhyme, and you think you know where it's going up until that, really the fourth stanza. You get a hint of it at the end of the third, the slipping through the skylight, peeling back the fly screen. But in the fourth stanza, you just get kind of plunged into this scene, you know, inject him with paralyzing agents and scalp his crown with a spoon, peel the fur from fat with my bare hands and feast on his parasite-infested ichor. Like, ew, but in the best way. to really go from the trembling child to, like the violence, to the attacker luring this wolf, to change the wolf itself from you know, the predator to the victim. I think it's just a way to really take this and turn it on its head. I thought it was fascinating. And it almost kind of has undertones to me of, like, the way that trauma can be dealt with, you know, like some creep that is creeping into bedrooms, you know, and instead of wanting to escape the house and run away, dead want to lash out and essentially eviscerate the person that harmed you. I think it works allegorically well in that context. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a great write. Beautifully violent. So I loved it. Hotep, what did you think?
It reminded me of The Three Little Pigs, but written by a child that survived trauma, whether that's sexual, emotional, or physical, and decided not to take the trauma anymore. That would be me as a young child. It also reminded me of Indigenous, Native Indian, Irish, who suffered trauma at the hands of the British or whichever the oppressor group was and decided, you know what, I'm not going to take this anymore. You're not the only one that can be a wolf. In fact, in order to survive, it seems as though I will have to become a wolf. Therefore, raw, here I am. So it represented various groups to me as I listened. And really good poem. Thank you.
I love that interpretation. Yeah, I got a bit of that too. I thought it was... Yeah, that response to being attacked, not flight, but fight. Excellent comment. Susanna, what did you think?
Yeah, I was going along the same lines. It reminded me of, like, the girl with the dragon tattoo kind of thing, where after being mistreated by men, I think she was beaten and raped, she became kind of an avenging angel and went after any men who did it to anyone else. And that kind of feeling came through here where it's like, I dare the big bad wolf to come back this direction because now I'm the wolf killer. It's a twist on the fairy tale. And, I mean, originally fairy tales were tales of caution to scare people into behaving. The big bad wolf was usually representative of, like, a sexual predator, like, going after Little Red Riding Hood. It's you do not just, like, get off the track and talk to some guy who's offering you things. It was meant to be a scary kind of thing. And it's changed throughout time as the world perceived, like, may, we like to think, is safer, even though it's not necessarily, that it's become all cutesy for fairy tales. And I mean, like, I'm a children's librarian. I read the cutesy versions, but I also read the scary versions, depending on my audience. And this is a twist on the scary versions for the grown-up perspective. And I love Neutron and her grittiness and how she goes for that fighting back. The line that really hit me, or I guess two lines, is the stripping children of their psyche morsel by morsel. And that's the thing, because you do get taken apart if by abuse, or even if not directly abuse, by kind of like fear-mongering or what have you. Little bit by bit, it tears you apart mentally. So she goes after his brain, like she scalps him and is going after the insides, in that bit by bit, taking away his mind the way that he took away their mind. So it feels like karma to the extreme, and Neutron just has a way of taking that grittiness and making it fun and yucky at the same time.
Agreed. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It is gritty, but wonderful. Really was. What do we have up next?
We have one by Jessica D. Could you please read that, Babbler? Perspective?
Absolutely. This is Perspective by Jessica D. Like stars lost to the glare of streetlight, bright and shiny people are easy to miss if you walk around with heart's eye blinded by love's loss. To see clearly again, allow an angel to realign your axis. It happened to me, a forcing open of a blind and shriveled heart, a new perspective. I spent so many hours outside at night, walking, running, lying in ruinous loss, looking up and seeing nothing. Since I met her, I see the stars again. I really loved the way this talks about how, you know, finding someone new or meeting someone new or even just an internalization of an angel, you know, can change the way that you see the world. Because it's so true. Like when it feels like you're either tired of being alone or you went through a horrible breakup or just something really a great loss, really. It doesn't even have to be a relationship affects somebody. Everything looks bleak. Everything looks gray because that's the lens that you're looking at the world through. But just one person, one interaction can change all that. And I think that's kind of what this is about. You know, since I met her, I see the stars again. You know, you don't see the stars if you're looking down all the time. So I think this is a beautiful kind of, it's a love poem in the way that it changes perspective. You know, the way you see the world is different. Although it's unusual in a love poem is in the focus kind of on the negative for the most of the poem. You know, stars lost to the glare of a streetlight, walking around with heart's eye blinded by love's loss. So I really thought it was a well-written articulation of that change, like the way you see things differently depending on where you are emotionally, and especially in a relationship where everything can be looking up and bright and sunny if you're happy. So I thought this was a wonderful write, and a great little love poem. So, what did you think, Jorge?
I thought it was very good. I, from an atheist perspective, when I think angel, I don't think, you know, wings and unicorns. I think people that could change our life, or inanimate objects or poems that could change our life. So the angel to me, as I read it, I thought, okay, that would have to be me picking up my own pieces in order to see the better future that exists. And for other people, that angel may be the poem that they just heard. That, you know, it's very good. That's why poetry is so important, and all students should learn it. So congrats to the writer. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree. For me, angel doesn't always just mean literal angel. You know, it could be an actual person, like an actual person, or, yeah, like you said, it can be something different altogether, a personification of an event or an object. What did you think, Fabiana?
I liked it. I liked how it starts and ends with the stars being lost to the glare of the streetlight. Sometimes there's so much artificial light, so maybe that kind of fake politeness that people have, there's so much of that that people put on that you don't necessarily always notice the truly good spirits who do care. So to me, the stars are like the really good people who you would connect with, but the streetlight is all of the fakeness that kind of drowns it out. And maybe when you've just lost someone and you have that love's loss holding you down, then it's hard to see who is the right ones, who you can connect with. And it wouldn't even have to necessarily be love in a romantic way. It can sometimes even be friendship where you see that connection. But then I see at the end it is actually love. Seeing the stars again to feel alive. Sometimes when you meet someone who's right for you, you just feel more alive in general. You have that connection where suddenly you notice everything. Everything sounds better and tastes better, and everything in life just feels more vibrant. Since I met her, I see the stars again. That's just a beautiful, beautiful ending.
Yeah, I agree. I think the ending is really beautiful. I like how you pointed out that it starts and ends with stars. I think that's an excellent observation. I also like that. Wonderful piece. What's up next?
We have one by Mr. M, and I have an audio for that one, so I'm going to play it.
This is my recital of The Great Hollow. Wandering in the bleakest depths of the soul, I heard a faint whisper, inaudible and weak. What was it that it may find me here, in the deepest recesses of my tainted core? The more I thought about it, the more I wondered what exactly it was trying to tell me. In my venture, I came across a large, familiar crater. This stirs within me something strange. Could it be emotion? Memories flashed, showing me a time before where many smiles were cast and many tears shed. As I walked, entranced by the glimpses of what once was, my hands brushed at the height of the flowers once present. I can almost smell them, feeling their petals dancing across my hand. The gentle breeze that sweetly kissed my cheek brought a sort of warmth with it. It felt almost pleasant. My hair whipped softly in the wind as the fauna of the great plain seduced the senses. The light of the sun reflected brilliantly off of the clouds amidst the twilight. Purples, yellows, and blues all strewn so aptly across the sky as if it were meant from my eyes alone. It was then that I heard the whisper again, slightly louder, but still unable to understand it. It was soon drowned out by the birds, loftily singing upon the branches of a nearby oak tree. I reached up towards one of them, to perhaps coax it into my hand. My face felt strange. Is this a smile? It has been so long, I cannot remember. Then there was a thunderous crash that rumbled for a moment, sending a ripple throughout the vast plain. Everything started to fade. I opened my eyes, and there were tears running down the sides of my face. This huge gaping chasm is where the last of my dreams has faded. The last tears bled for the sake of self-pity. I had long hoped this day wouldn't come. Long have I asked myself if I would ever be able to aspire or hope or feel anything other than this nothingness. That is when the whisper made its final pass, saying only one word, never.
Wonderful, SoundCloud. I really enjoyed it. It felt like a performance. As I read it, the Great Hollow is, the chasm where emotions should be. As someone who has struggled with depression repeatedly throughout my life, I really kind of understand where this is coming from, because this is how, well, at least my interpretation of it. When I get depressed, it really is like an absence of emotion, that I feel sad. I don't, it's not like I'm spending all day crying. I'm spending all day not feeling. Like, I'm just completely dissociated from any emotions. I feel like a robot living my life. Everything just feels very mechanical. And I think this poem really kind of depicts that feeling really well for me, that I get. And to feel like these brushes of feelings, like just the faintest whispers of emotions, like the memory of flowers, little bird songs, breeze on the face, and remembering vaguely what it was like to feel happy, but not feeling it necessarily in that moment. I find really relatable. I love the interweaving of that emotionlessness and this narration of kind of what's happening, tied in with these detailed depictions of nature that, in many ways should spark like these positive feelings, but doesn't, and is written in a way that is bland enough that you understand it. Was soon drowned out by the birds loftily singing upon the branches of a nearby oak tree. It's describing the scene, and it's almost describing things as beautiful, and yet none of the adjectives actually are emotive. There's nothing in that language itself that would push you to saying that it was described as happy or sad. That's kind of being colored by your own recollection or feeling of what birds singing in a tree is like. Birds, it literally just says there's birds singing high up in a tree that's nearby. There's nothing there that's actually emotive. So I thought that was really clever to actually not tie emotive words in it, except we're intentionally peppered to kind of get at that brush of feeling. So I loved that about this piece, because I think it ties the point of it together very well. That ending of it is kind of heart-wrenching too, because it's kind of like when you're in the real doldrums of despair, like that real pit, when you're like, is this ever going to end? Am I ever going to feel again? To be met with your own like internal monologue of no. And that is where like some of the actual worst pain comes from, is when you don't know that you're ever going to feel that way again. I get in the habit of when I'm dealing with this kind of feeling, having the mantra of go, you know, this will end, this will end, this will end. I just keep telling myself that. So I found this piece very relatable, and I really loved some of the technicalities in here that were very carefully thought about. I thought it was a great piece, and it emotes well, despite being nearly devoid of emotion. So excellent write. Excellent write. Faziana, what did you think?
Well, I loved the SoundCloud. He has such a great reading voice, and it was so theatrical that the first line, I really thought he was going to break out into song, but the way that he read it had so much inflection and emotion that it worked really nicely. I definitely agree with you that this is about depression, and it has that disassociated view of things where it's experiencing but not fully experiencing. I've been like that before, where you feel like you're watching yourself from across the room, and you see that you're doing things, and, you know, it's like you logically know, like, that's a fun thing to be doing, but you're not actually feeling it. It doesn't feel like you're actually the one experiencing it. Now, mind you, I have mental illnesses, so that may not be a universal experience, but it seems familiar to me in the way that he describes it here. I like that he comes across this crater, and the crater makes me think that that's like where negative feelings were. There was possibly pain, and he looks at it, and it's like he knows that he should have feelings about that, but he doesn't even know what feelings are anymore. There's that detachedness. I really liked that the way he used breeze to talk about that little touch of emotion. The gentle breeze that sweetly kissed my cheek brought a sort of warmth with it. Felt almost pleasant. It's those little teases of feeling that can sometimes actually be the most painful when you're depressed, because even though it's like a good feeling, there's that tiny little good feeling which in some ways gives you hope that there will be more, but at the same time it's like, that's how I'm supposed to feel all the time, and I only have like this like just out of reach glimpse of it, and I don't know if I'll ever really feel it again. That I don't think I've ever seen anyone write that so well. So I really appreciate this. And at the end, never made me think of Edgar Allan Poe, Nevermore. I just heard it in like the quote the raven kind of thing at that for that last line. Well done, Mr. M.
Great observations. I agree with a lot of what you had to say. What did you think?
I'm going with the same thing to me being a dreamer. I feel like
it's a different thing. What's your name?
Can you hear me like that?
Hello? No, I'm old.
You're very, very quiet.
Yeah? Oh, my signal is low.
There we go.
Okay, by the way, where I'm at, the weather is odd and there's a lot of snow. It's possible that signal's being impeded. The emotion, well, I felt angry as I listened to the poem, not in a happy place, because it feels like a poem written where an environment is being destroyed by modern Homo sapiens, and either a bear or a human, subconscious or other animals, are responding, we're in trouble. And the person is, or the animal is feeling hope, and then the response is never, because man-made objects and shiny things and tall buildings are replacing nature, and it looks like nature is a wrap. So that's what I thought. Kind of anger and frustration, not at the writer, but at what was induced in me as I heard it. I said, wait a minute, that's true. We are destroying nature. And I also thought of native tribes that kind of have lost their way, and their way of life is crushed, whether that's here in America or Australia. So different people and organisms came to mind. And I like the fact that not using many adjectives, The reason is sometimes if we use adjectives, it guides the reader or listener into a direction. But if we just say, the children laughed, then it leaves it up to interpretation, and sometimes that's a good route. So overall, really good poem, and thank you.
Excellent comment and fascinating perspective. I really enjoyed that. Thank you. I love looking at it from a different light. Maybe I wouldn't have thought of myself. So where are we off to now?
We are now going to an audio by Naomi Sarah. So here we go.
Birdsong. Her fingers dug into the moistness of her mossy bed, sucking in its softness, plunging down deep to the cold hardness of the rock beneath. It was her own golden glitters of a magical kingdom, her tucked away secret, a sacred little hideout, where shine unites and dragons breathe fresh fragrant air into her thirsty lungs. A mystical land where birds song hung in the air, toads sung bass to sunlight dance, bouncing upon the river's mirror in sparkles of river trout. A safe haven where she sat for hours with her books by the river's bend, as tick-tocks fled, drifting out upon shimmering waters, to them drown, forgot in Atlantis, where the mermaids sleep. Each page turned, a hand reaching out, grasping her, yanking her in to realms beyond. The sweetness of grass, the sway of daisies upon the wind, beyond the flutters of orange and black of the passing monarch, and a buzz of a bee. And she swelled, bursting with a sudden inward fire, to walk across the lolling fields, to stroll past the river bend, and glimpse silent treasures that lay hidden in worlds afar. To hold them, stroke and caress their fairy wings, hugging them inside her eyes. To watch her footprint prints glisten under untrodden sunshine beaming down through unicorn-shaped candy popcorn clouds, hungry to savor the sugary perfume of pastel-painted petals poured in pretty pink, gilted greens, baby blues, up and down the hillsides, smiling to the symphony, the crisp, clear chirping of renewed bird song.
Wonderful poem from Naomi and lovely sound cloud. I did note too here at the bottom for peace, it says to read the AN, so I'll go ahead and do that. The AN says, I really had this little secret place when I was young by the river behind my home where I read many books. Fantasy was my favorite. The stories and fabulous lands described did give me that taste of adventure to explore and the hope to discover wonders that existed beyond. Really enjoyed it. This kind of
scrapes into like an imaginary place that's kind of tied into a real place, to envision somewhere as magical and to think of all the things that could be and the interesting perspective of it. And just as we're slowly taken through every scene of her imagination to see what's here in just all of these delicious little details, I think is really wonderful. Just the what goes on inside of mind when they see a certain place. Just any one of these things I could pick, but to watch her footprints glisten under untrodden sunshine, beaming down through unicorn-shaped candy popcorn clouds. All the colors and the imagery tied in here, I think, really takes you to the place. Like, it's almost meditative. Like, you can feel the relaxation and the natural surroundings tied in with, like, these fantastic little twists of dragons and knights and fairy wings and the real mixed with the surreal. That was really beautiful and very artfully and well done. So, wonderful write, Naomi. Hotep, what did you think?
I could only decipher about 10%. I think it may have been the compression algorithm used on the vocals, or it could be, of course, my signal, so I can't give a really, a good summary. But from what the portions I heard, it did sound intriguing. At first, I thought it was sensual, the first lines, but then I lost a lot of signal. So I'm going to defer to your expertise, since you all have it, I think, in text as well as the audio. Thank you.
Too bad. Yeah, I do see what you're saying, too. There were some lines in here also that I thought gave nods to the sensual. Just starting with, like, the fingers dug into the moistness, I think kind of, guides the reader into a kind of sensual place. And then that happens, there's a few lines, I think, that are like that throughout this. But then it pulls you back to almost a more innocent place as well. So I thought it was fascinating, the kind of push and pull of sensual and innocent. So I see where you were going with that. It's a shame that you couldn't hear the whole thing. But thank you for your comment. Fabiana, what did you think?
I agree with that. For most of it, I found like it was like a childlike innocence, but every once in a while, it was like the part where, and she swelled, bursting with a sudden inward fire. Like, to me, that has potential to be sensual. But then there goes back to that innocence of, looking at the insects and wanting to stroke their fairy wings. And at first I was like, oh, but that makes it so they can't fly and it kills them. But she's hugging them inside her eyes, it specifies. Mm-hmm. So that means she's just looking at them. It's like she's absorbing them and mentally hugging them, but not actually touching and impacting the environment, which just, warms my heart a little bit. I like that she gets so lost in the stories, each page turned, a hand reaching out, grasping her, yanking her in. She's brought right into the stories that she's reading there in nature. And that combination of the beautiful wildlife and the way she's lost in her reading is just absolutely beautiful. And Naomi's voice is so calming, which is a contrast with last week, because last week she was doing like the woman scorned, like yelling, like she was like tough. And this time she's so gentle. So complete opposite. So very well, Naomi, to show your range, how you can be the gritty or you can be the gentle fairy tale, and I love that you can do both.
Agreed. I recall the more violent piece, more angry. Violent isn't the right word. More angry. But yeah, there's definitely a contrast. I think it's a wonderful mix of imagination and fantasy and reality and sensuality and innocence all wrapped into one. It's a pretty complex piece, and yet it reads so nice and so smooth. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful Rite for Naomi. So we have about 5 minutes left. So where do you want to take off from here?
Our last one from the contest, or actually we have perfect timing for that, is by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Orbit. There is a universe that covers the Earth, and we are all creators of worlds and destroyers of others, secret worlds with guarded entrances. Some are hells unimagined, with abuse, hatred, and suffering. Some are the heavens of kings, with luxury, pride, and security. Billions in between that orbit and float. We are all interstellar travelers, and we forget that we can. Safety comforts the repetitive soul. Adventure inspires it. Horizon calls each day, dares us to follow the light and not hide in shelters through the darkness to await its return. And the Arctic Tern sails on the thermal streams from the peak of the Earth to the opposite shore to witness the brave first tree that defies the frost, to marvel at the expanse of the forest kingdom, to ponder, yet ignore, the human experience, to witness the diversity from jungle to desert, to land at home, and land at home on ancient ice, and wait for call to return. I think from the backyard on quiet afternoons, on store-bought chair, on fresh-cut grass, with beer in hand and music in ears, I think of surroundings with musical distraction, a quick glance up of distant wings, too far for detail, too slow to entice, and I fall back with relaxing muscles to thoughts and music, and the bird sails on. End poem.
While we read, I enjoyed this piece, the use of... Again, I think he did this last week as well, of tying, like, where he is and in his perspective and what's happening to this natural experience as well, both on a grand scale and as it occurs to a particular animal, in this case, an Arctic tern. You know, so much is going on that's grander than any one given person. I like the idea that we are all creators of worlds and destroyers of others, secret worlds with guarded entrances. You know, we kind of stomp around in this life, and, you know, every footfall determines what we break or what we create or, you know, how things go. And we're, I think, mostly unaware of that on many levels. So I like how that kind of played out here, you know. And here we are sitting through space on this little planet, not seeing the full repercussions of every action. So I liked that as a perspective from the beginning of it. And then to take that perspective and then turn it into, you know, what a single animal would see, you know, as we interpret that experience, you know, to be sailing, you know, in the sky, like on wings, looking at everything around, you know, all the nature and taking in all the forests and the landscapes, and see how they change every year, and not really take in necessarily humanity and see the threat that it is or maybe isn't, most likely is. I really love, and then you zoom out again and you see, you know, the narrator here in the backyard just kind of lounging in a chair with a beard. And just contemplating everything and yet also contemplating nothing, again, being mostly removed from it all. So I thought it was a wonderful write. Daniel, I usually enjoy this line. Right. Hotep, what did you think?
Yeah, it reminded me of a writer that is taking responsibility for some of what occurs by starting off with a basic summary of the planet's relationship to the galaxy so that no biases are involved. So no nationality, no ethnic group, we all on the planet. So it was a very smart approach then everyone can agree. Yes, it's one planet. Okay, yeah, sure. Had the writer started with in China or in America or da-da, then automatically some people would not get the sense of the poem. But then when the writer mentioned with the bear and music, gave it a more Western kind of American feel, as the writer has reflected in the past on our planet and how fragile it is, and possibly even the writer taking some responsibility for the demise of the planet. That's just what I got from the end, because the writer could have said, I sat with my microscope investigating how to solve the problem. But no, the writer had a bear listening to music, and I thought, okay, we all have to take some responsibility in some one way or another. But yeah, very good poem. Thank you.
I like that interpretation. I love the twist of the looking through the microscope. A great comment. And Feziana, what did you think?
I love Daniel's writing. I enjoy that he enters most of my contests. I think that he has this habit of going big and then bringing it back to his own experience, or sometimes the opposite. He'll start with his experience and then he'll expand on how that may differ or how it relates to the world. Like you said, last week he also had that nature connection, and he talked about all the different things that people that creatures had to experience in the wild, and then he's like, and meanwhile I'm afraid to walk from my car to my house because it's too cold, and he's like, and it's not even close to as cold as other people and animals are experiencing. So once again here it's that big beautiful world and so much going on. There's the awful things of the abuse and hatred and suffering, but there's also beautiful things. And we each have our own worlds that we're creating, I think, in our minds, you know, the fictional worlds that us writers come up with. And then the social circles and the things that we create, like maybe for our children, or like the worlds that we develop within our world. And then he brings it back to, and here I am just being in my backyard, thinking about things and, you know, within that smaller bubble. I really like the way that he can play with context like that. Now, we are officially over time, so thank you so much to Babbler and Hotep for being here and reading with us and commenting. Thank you to everyone who wrote and shared your poetry with us. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot on Blog Talk Radio. And I hope that everyone has a wonderful weekend. Please check out our contest on allpoetry.com. Babbler and I always have something going on. I have multiple shows that I host, so check out my contest, Aphasiana, on allpoetry.com, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.